Our dependence on connected technology is growing faster than our ability to secure it, especially in areas affecting public safety and human life.
I'm Bryson Bort, and this is Hack the Plant. Electricity, finance, transportation, our water supply. We take these critical infrastructure systems for granted, but they're all becoming increasingly dependent on the internet to function. Every day, I ask and look for answers to the questions. Does our connectivity leave us more vulnerable to attacks by our enemies? I'm a senior fellow at the R Street Institute and the co-founder of the nonprofit ICS Village, educating people on critical infrastructure security with hands-on examples, not just nerd stuff. I founded GRIM in 2013, a consultancy that works the front lines of these problems every day for clients all over the world.
It's playing out in Israel right now, where hackers have been going after Israeli water systems. Again, not to steal information from them, but to change the setting on the chemicals in Israeli water.
Each month, I'm going to walk you through my world of hackers, insiders, and government working on the front lines of cybersecurity and public safety to protect the systems you rely upon every day.
If you think that the small town water authorities and the mom and pop sized companies have better cybersecurity in the US than the Israelis do, I have really, really bad news for you.
An attack on our critical infrastructure, the degradation to the point that they can no longer support us, means that we go back to the Stone Age literally overnight.
If we think the government's going to solve it for us, we're wrong. We have to help them.
This is not a podcast for the faint of heart. If you want to meet those protecting the world and what problems keep them up at night, then this is the podcast for you.
I'm Bryson Bort, and this is Hack the Plant. For today's episode, I'm joined by Rob Lee, who's the CEO and founder of the industrial cybersecurity company Tragos Incorporated. He's considered a pioneer in the ICS threat intelligence and incident response community. The Tragos platform provides cybersecurity technology, providing comprehensive visibility to assets and a response plan to threats for ICS OT assets. Before Tragos, Rob served as a cyber operations officer in the U.S. Air Force, where he helped identify and analyze threats to industrial infrastructure, an issue that leaders in the United Kingdom, Saudi Arabia, Australia, Singapore are now wrestling with. We're here today to talk about industrial control systems and the key challenges to their security in an increasingly digital, interconnected, complex, and automated world.
I usually tell people the threat is worse than you realize, but not as bad as you want to imagine. This isn't like, oh my God, we're all going to die. But at the same time, yeah, it's getting a lot more real than people realize. And we're seeing, you know, state actors breaking into facilities and stealing intellectual property and pre-positioning and learning and doing that type of stuff.
Why are ICS systems such a big deal? They're everywhere.
I mean, well, you probably work at an industrial company. Like everything outside of financial sectors is industrial. Data centers, HVAC systems. Utilities are obvious, mining, rail, oil and gas, chemical. It's not just the big industrials. You start getting into like anything and everything has OT and industrial system.
OT refers to operational technology, hardware, software that monitors and controls physical devices and processes within ICS. As Rob points out, this is a critical piece of the day-to-day functioning of our society, business, and government.
There was a point in time when our operators and engineers understood everything in and out about that facility and that control environment. But because of this increasing complexity, because of this increasing automation, nobody really knows all the ins and outs anymore. And they're lacking in the details and the data and the things they need to know what's really going on. So the ability to get things like root cause analysis of what really happened and why, so we can do better next time, is damn near impossible in some of these facilities. To be fair to our asset owners and operators, like that's what's been pushed on them. And they are amazing when you sit down with these folks that are keeping the lights on, keeping the rail on time, et cetera. They just need some more help.
What are the key issues at stake in keeping our industrial control system safe? Join us for a deep dive. All right, Rob, you are one of the co-founders of Dragos. So what do you all do?
From a company perspective, our main focus from a revenue line perspective, from what our company does, is our technology. So the Dragos platform is technology that we deploy into those operations and industrial networks for the purpose of giving the folks of the company insight to what they have. So it helps you create your asset inventory. It automatically and kind of passively and safely discovers the devices on the network, understands the control system communications, kind of figure out what is there. That helps a lot with everything from supply chain discussions to resilience to just, you know, needing an asset inventory for pretty much everything that you do in security. But then on top of that, where we go a little bit further than kind of what's normal in the market, is we also have our analytics, which are just, think of it as kind of advanced queries looking across our system for various industrial focused threats that we track and understand. And then knowing that a lot of companies don't have ICS security people, we also have playbooks with each one of those detections that pops up and says, here, you know, this is what a step-by-step process looks like to investigate and kind of respond to this detection. So that platform kind of, you know, vulnerability, visibility, threat detection, response kind of category. But the way that we approach it is really unique, where we approach it by the mindset of having a lot of smart people. You know, I'm good with like machine learning and stuff like that, and that can be in the product. But I think a lot of times what we see in product companies is an over-pitching of how, as if that's the differentiation. Like, oh, we use blockchain or we use AI. And for us, it's, you know, we'll look at any different tech stack and see what makes sense for us. But the reality is, hire and employ a bunch of smart folks from the community that have hands-on experience and codify and productize human expertise. What a lot of folks know us for beyond the Dragos platform is we also have an intel team that goes out and hunts those threats and tracks them and reports on them. And we also have a services team that does everything from kind of red teaming and architecture assessments to incident response and hunting. So it's that combination of kind of services, intel, and product that allows us to be a really good partner to our customers and kind of on their journey of industrial.
So you said safely discover assets. I want to pull the thread on that. The start in the industrial control system space, like information technology was in the 80s and 90s, was configuration management. What the hell do I even have? And that's a particular challenge in industrial control systems. Can you talk about that and how we've moved from a passive to a hybrid discovery process and why that's important?
Yeah. For decades, the strategy for industrial security was prevention only. Segment the power plant, segment the rail line, segment the HVAC system, segment things from the other networks and the internet, and occasionally put up a firewall and to keep it tuned. Then, okay, well, let's also do patch management. Then, like, okay, let's also do anti-malware systems and antivirus. But everything was prevention, 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 with the leading strategy of segmentation. It's not that prevention is a bad strategy. It is as a starting place. I think it's inadequate unless you have prevention, detection, response. But the real weakness of prevention is if you don't have detection, your prevention is deteriorating over time. You're not keeping your firewalls tuned. You don't really know what's on your network.
The old way was security through obscurity. Hackers can't hack what they can't touch, but everything's interconnected, including industrial control systems, and they're not truly air-gapped most of the time with their connections to the enterprise. The perimeter is dead. In security, we call this model assumed breach, because a determined adversary will get inside your network. From there, it's a question of your focus on detection and response. Will you be able to catch them in time?
As integrators and original equipment manufacturers, and these vendors of the industrial systems needed more access to those systems to provide more efficiencies and business value. As these companies have started down kind of their digital transformation journeys, where they are using more cloud and analytics and things to increase reliability and safety, but also business efficiencies. As all that's happened, what we have is a hyper-connected operations technology environment. So the strategy of segmentation, which was the leading one and backed by every framework, standard, regulation, et cetera, is definitely no longer sufficient, but it's still the predominant strategy. Then you look at the fact that when something happens, we don't have any ability to detect or respond to it. You can't be resilient if you don't know what's going on. And so that's where like the community is starting to push a lot more people. And that starts with, what the heck do I have? Which goes to your topic of visibility. In that topic of visibility, beyond the people weren't doing it because that wasn't the focus. When we actually get down and try to do it, you know, a lot of your operators and engineers and folks in that environment, they want an inventory too. They're cataloging things in like Visio diagrams and Excel spreadsheets and whatever, just for a general maintenance purpose. But it's a lot of walking facilities. This isn't an IT network that's centrally located. These are plant by plant by plant, you know, kind of physical locations, walking the systems, you know, hard hat, knee pads, tracing wires, you know, trying to get access to where this stuff is. On top of that, you know, when it then gets into kind of the passive discussion, this entrance into the market of, well, let's have ICS or OT or whatever you call it, industrial specific technologies that understand the protocols and the communications and the networks and the ICS equipment so that I can automatically start discovering that. And that was great, right? And that's that passive discussion of, we're not going to send data to controllers. We're not going to send queries. We're not going to scan stuff. We're going to listen and analyze the traffic and come to those discussions. So what then started happening is where you're going to is some companies wanted to start positioning this active scanning. And they try to pitch it in various ways, which probably seem friendlier. Like, it's not active scanning, it's friendly polling, or, you know, like safe polling or whatever else. But they're still talking about sending data to these systems across the network in such a way to try to profile them even more or find like firmware versions and similar. And what we've seen time and time again is the broader market talked about it for like 2 to 3 years as, you have to be doing this. And at Dragos, we never did. We never went that route. We always stayed in passive. And I'm not saying it's impossible to do. I think it's actually perfectly fine in an assessment, in a maintenance period of the plant, you know, et cetera, to go through and with training and with the right tooling, start querying data actively. But what I have found time and time again is all the people that say, of course you can do this. Like, they don't know every industrial environment and how it's configured. And I have seen numerous times where that active scanning or polling or whatever takes down those sites. And so what it's not like this scary boogeyman that's like, somebody said this might happen. Like, we have dozens of cases where this happens, where somebody deploys a product that can actively interrogate or just, you know, sort of discover these devices. And it starts tripping up a controller or, you know, causing latency on the network, or the system doesn't know how to handle it. And even using native industrial protocols, they may not be completely integrated correctly, or you use a wrong native protocol in the wrong system. And next thing you know, your power plant's going offline because you made a mistake in the controllers. On top of that, and I don't want to go on too long of a tirade here, but on top of that, the first incident that happens at a site, regardless if it was your product's fault or not, when the engineers and the vendors start looking at that site and they go, hey, what's that box hanging off the network? Oh yeah, it scans the network. Well, I'm not touching this until you remove that. And it gets blamed, even when it's not actually at fault. And so what we found is that this, let me actively query kind of data on the system, actually poses risk, has been the result of more power outages than Russia, China, Iran combined, and culturally is a good way for security to get kicked out of those facilities and not invited back. So I just generally don't encourage it at all, unless you're doing it from like an assessment perspective with, you know, kind of permission and like a maintenance period or similar. What we found is passively doing it, it gets like 80, 90% of what people are wanting. And that last 10%, then they can just load into the system themselves without ever risking operations.
How do folks not know what they have on their network?
You see these industrial environments that change quickly. And so there's this idea that these industrial environments are super stable and they never change or whatever. And that's just not the reality. We don't have all the Facebook and YouTube and Google connections that you would have in an enterprise network, but integrators, you know, equipment manufacturers, et cetera, are constantly kind of moving the needle on what can be done in these environments. And that means that changes in inventory and updates and new equipment and similar happens. And when you do that at not one plant, but you do that at a company that has, you know, 3,000 substations, or, you know, 100 transmission substations, or 16 water treatment facilities, or whatever else, it just becomes a very complex problem at scale. And knowing every piece of networked equipment and how it's operating and how it's working, it's just very difficult to do. So what we tend to find is there was a point in time when people had an understanding of what was in their environment, not how it was communicating, not how it was connected, but had an inventory, not a topology, as we would call it, of what this really looks like in real life. They might have had an inventory at one time, but usually it's in an Excel spreadsheet or a Visio diagram that's 5-10 years old, and it's wildly out of date with what the reality is there. So that also goes back to my comment on prevention. And so the value of prevention decreases unless you're also doing the other things as well.
Yeah, I like to describe that as security is a constant fight against gravity. But I want to make sure I'm clear on this. You're saying that industrial control systems, those environments should not allow access to TikTok.
Yeah, that's generally the policy. I would tell you that there are plenty of places that we go that of course, is not the reality. Maybe not TikTok, but I've seen a lot of sites you go and they're like, we're air-gapped. And I'm like, you're streaming Hulu. And they're like, oh, yeah, no, I guess we have internet. Okay, guys.
An air gap is not an air gap. It is not an air gap. This is something we've covered on the show a few times, but I think it's worth bringing up yet again. What is an air gap? What should an air gap be? And what really is an air gap?
Yeah, a real air gap is when there is no ability for communications to flow in and out of an environment. It's actually disconnected from all these other networks. And there are very few places you'll ever find a real one. In the nuclear power industry, you will find real ones where they truly have in their nuclear network, as it relates to operations and control, zero interactive kind of connectivity. What we then see as like a step out from that is people go, well, I don't want interactive, but I want to be able to see what's going on. And so I'll deploy a data diode, this product that will allow a one-way transmission of data. And at first, that was okay for like nuclear power. It's not realistic for these other companies that move data in and out of environments, though. So the next thing they do is, oh, well, I want a diode on the way in, too. And it's like you've expanded that communication, not minimized in the way you really thought you did. The next level that people claim are air gaps is when they have a well-tuned firewall in front of their plant. That's definitely not an air gap. We still see people call it that. And so I guess my point is a true air gap is zero connectivity. What we see people pitch air gaps as is various levels of connectivity, still calling it an air gap. And there's not problems with reducing the amount of connections in and out of those environments. I think creating choke points, these natural places where there's limited connectivity, but you can monitor what's going on, like that's perfectly reasonable and a good way to approach connectivity. But when you don't allow connectivity or you're very restrictive on it, it's very Jurassic Park, you know, life finds a way. And so we'll see operators and engineers setting up their own wireless access cards. You'll see you'll see people bypassing the things you put in place because they're actually adverse to operations. It's adverse to the business operations as well. And so it's not very realistic to do. It is okay to limit connections, but you will always have connections as long as you're, again, probably outside the nuclear power industry.
Let's get into your background. What led you here? Rumor is you went to another service academy. I've heard there's one besides West Point.
Started my education at the Air Force Academy, but I didn't really know what it was about and didn't really have any intentions of going there. And I didn't really fully understand it. Both my parents were enlisted, senior master sergeants. My dad was an old Vietnam guy. And, you know, I was going to go to Auburn. I'm from Alabama originally. I was going to go to Auburn or Alabama. And he kind of like poked me in my junior year and was like, yeah, you couldn't get in the Air Force Academy anyways. I'm like, what's the Air Force Academy, Dad? You know, like this kind of like naive crap. And he's like, oh, no. And he just schooled me like reverse psychology. And he's like, oh, no, you couldn't get it anyways. And I was like, all right, well, I'll try. And I got in. I was like, oh, I guess I'll go give it a shot. I'll go for 6 months to a year. And if I don't like it, I'll leave, which is not a real thing. And so when I went there and I get off the bus and they're yelling and shaving your head and, you know, PT and physical training and kind of like beating the crap out of you and stuff, you're like, what is this? And so I don't know. I don't know that I perfectly fit in. I was too stubborn to leave. And so I ended up graduating. But along the way, probably what the most formidable thing for me was on summers, you could get to go, you know, fly planes or like get to go home for once. And neither of those things were interesting to me. They forced me to go fly in an F-16 in Korea, like for training purposes and crap. And I was like, okay, that's nice, but this is not what I want to spend my life doing. But most of my summers, I was like, oh crap, can I go somewhere cool? And they're like, oh yeah, there's like this Engineers Without Borders Do you want to go do engineering, kind of humanitarian work in Africa? I'm like, yes, that sounds great. So I would spend time in places like Cameroon and building like water filtration units and wind turbines and things like that. You know, mostly there was so much good work going on well beyond us, but we would contribute a little. And it was very cool to see these things that we call control systems and the value they bring to society and, you know, keeping the lights on and creating little micro economies to help communities. And yeah, that kicked off my love for control systems. And when I found out there were people that were interested in like hurting people and attacking these things, it just seemed really offensive. And I was like, dude, I'm going to go protect these things because that's what's going to protect people. And so, yeah, after I left the Air Force Academy, they kicked me off. They said, hey, you want to be a pilot? And I'm like, not at all. And they said, well, you go be cyber then. I'm like, what's cyber? And they're like, I don't know. Go do it. And they kind of put me through the schoolhouse, put me through the ringer, et cetera, picked up a lot of stuff and then kind of got shipped out. Long story short, landed at the NSA. They were like, what do you do? I'm like, I don't know, cyber. And they're like, that's not a thing. I'm like, okay, what do you want me to do? And they're like, find the new threats. I'm like, what are the new threats? They're like, I don't know. I'm like, okay, this is really well formed out. And I was like, why don't we just focus on control systems? They're like, what are control systems? I'm like, oh God, okay. We're going to look for threats against control systems. And along that path, I ended up building out and leading the U.S. government's mission on identifying state actors breaking into industrial sites around the world. And that's kind of what kicked it all off.
Any particularly interesting stories or clients, of course, anonymized, that you can share on that?
From like a Dragos perspective, we always go into the coolest places. And you know, all these different industrial operations are just so beautiful and it's so wonderful to see what they're doing in their communities and impact of global, you know, trade and everything else. But yeah, there's plenty of craziness. You know, we had an incident response case as an example where the change across the system that caused enough noticeable change from like a physics perspective, like consider like electric power outage type stuff, but not outage, maybe like voltage change, that it was a big enough thing to scare the company and probably something that was going to be reportable. And they had no understanding, none. They don't have the forensics in the environment. They don't have logs. They don't have visibility. Like most of these places, the company wasn't doing anything wrong. That's just been the strategy. And so they were really thinking this could be like a state actor or something. Like, oh my gosh, what is this? Like, we did not send those commands across the system to those controllers. Like, something is going wrong across multiple systems. This is exactly like we've seen in different attacks before. And like, as we go in, it just, you know, deploying our tech and like getting in from a visibility perspective, what we're seeing was there's like some old crazy bug in the software that just never met all the right conditions before that was causing voltage change across electric systems, across multiple substations, just off of an issue in software. And it's not like a crazy story. I mean, it is crazy when you think about the impact, but it's not so much a crazy story from that end. What's crazy to me and what's thematic of what we're seeing is there was a point in time when our operators and engineers understood everything in and out about that facility and that control environment. But because of this increasing complexity and because of this increasing automation and this increasing things that drive so much value, what we're seeing is nobody really knows all the ins and outs anymore. And they're lacking in the details and the data and the things they need to know what's really going on. So the ability to get things like root cause analysis of what really happened and why, so we can do better next time, is damn near impossible in some of these facilities. And we've seen that type of case like multiple times every year, huge, huge things. And it's not state actors, it's complexity. Now, of course, we do see the state actors way more. I usually tell people the threat is worse than you realize, but not as bad as you want to imagine. This isn't like, oh, my God, we're all going to die. But at the same time, yeah, it's getting a lot more real than people realize. And we're seeing, you know, state actors breaking into facilities and stealing intellectual property and pre-positioning and learning and doing that type of stuff. But those cases, to me, aren't as crazy as like, we just don't understand our system anymore. And I think it might have societal impact. What should we do? And that to me is just like otherworldly. It's pretty awesome. But again, to be fair to our asset owners and operators, like that's what's been pushed on them. And they are amazing when you sit down with these folks that are keeping the lights on, keeping the rail on time, et cetera. They just need some more help.
You recently announced that Malcolm Turnbull from Australia is investing. And it seems like we've hit a turning point in how everybody is starting to get that this is truly important to think about.
Wildly so. So When I started my career in industrial control systems, I think it is fair to say that there were other industrial security people that had spent time and effort to really raise the discussion. And there was a budding community forming, still in, like, you could name everybody in it kind of feel, but it was budding. But outside of that very small group of people, and we all knew each other, that was it. And this idea of, like, what's industrial? What's OT? What's IC? What is this stuff? That was the common, like, question across everywhere, from policymakers to businesses, everybody. And I mean, even when I started on the agency side of the house, it was, why are you doing that? Like, what is the, there's no ICS specific threats, or they're all disconnected systems anyways. Why are you wasting your time? And as we've started to collect in those environments and take a look and go, okay, well, let's look inside. What's actually going on? We start seeing all this activity. It's raised the discussion of, oh, like, there's non-security value and there's security value to this, and there are real security risks. And the journey we're on is kind of that digital transformation convergence with, you know, ICS threat landscape convergence, not IT/OT convergence. That's already happened. Like, this is a path that's worrisome. I think, you know, it's fair to say, and I hope it's not arrogant, but I've spent a lot of my career trying to educate and help people. And so, sure, I do my stuff over Drago, so I still teach at SANS as an example. And I have spent years just going down to the Hill in Congress and taking a whiteboard and talking to staffers. And, hey, you know, there's not one electric grid, right? There's multiple. And here's how electric power works in the United States. Or, hey, I know you think our asset owners aren't doing a whole lot, but here's actually all they do. And here's the challenges they face. And you know what? The government doesn't even have its answers together. And here's all the crazy stuff all of your agencies are actually saying, these, you know, CEOs and stuff. And so you just spend a lot of time educating, as others have done. And over that time, with a very community-wide approach, we've seen the raising profile of OT. Because if you look back, even dating to 1998, when President Clinton issued Presidential Directive 63, I believe it was, talking about critical infrastructure can be vulnerable to cyber attacks and designating, like, sector-specific agencies and all, the discussion was always critical infrastructure. And what they were trying to articulate but didn't was, we really care about health and safety. We really care about these things that could impact national security or kill people. And that's, you know, that's somewhere we should focus. But what that expanded into was, everything's critical infrastructure. And even casinos now are critical infrastructure. And that critical infrastructure term became super conflated on. Everybody's critical if you think about it. And we got even further abstracted from industrial. But what we've seen over the past couple of years, and really, really in the last 2 years, is a much more hyper focus on, well, hold on now, when we say critical infrastructure, we're not talking about your email servers and similar. That's important. We should do that. But what we're really talking about is life and safety and national security. Like, can you have an oil spill? Can you have a chemical explosion? Can you have a power outage? And there's a better awareness at the board level and CEO level of these companies, and now in Congress and around the world, that what we're talking about is OT. That, yes, your enterprise security and your enterprise systems are important. And yes, enterprise systems can impact OT, and we care a lot about it, but we've underinvested in OT. And that focus is something that we need to do, because that is what we're talking about when we really say and talk about the critical infrastructure component of these industrial companies. Anyways, so that profile is raised to the point that, you know, Ann Neuenberger, an extraordinarily impressive individual who's the White House Deputy National Security Advisor for Cyber and Emerging Technologies, so kind of the president's cyber person. She's in, you know, keynoting the SANS ICS Summit, talking about how the president is, you know, focused on OT security and, like, actually cares about OT. And, like, there's an action plan that they're preparing about the White House to address, you know, help the community. You see the National Security Advisor tweeting out, about, you know, security. You see multiple congressional hearings where they're asking, you know, DHS and others, what do you think the top concerns are? Number one, supply chain. Number two, control systems, because that's what can kill people, and that's where we care. Then you see Singapore standing up their OT master plan. You see Saudi Arabia focusing on it. You see UK focusing on it. You see Australia investing a lot in it. And to the point now, we see world leaders. We have Malcolm Turnbull, the previous prime minister of Australia, getting up in front and saying OT security is necessary. It's different than IT security because of the threats, risks, missions, you know, kind of everything around it. And we need to have a dedicated approach. And, like, that is insane. And I'm sure there's new people entering the field. They're like, oh, okay, yeah, that's exciting. But for anybody who's been here a minute, I'm not trying to, like, separate that out at all. Please come. We need more people. But for anybody that's been here for a minute, like, that is insane. That is so different from where we were 5 years ago, let alone 10. And it's just so exciting to see that there's real focus on it. And my advice, actually, is usually to the CSOs, where the CEO and board are having conversations about OT security at a world leader kind of community, whatever level, and they're concerned about it. And there's a number of CSOs who look at that and go, oh, okay, well, I'm going to take my enterprise security strategy and then copy and paste it into the plants then. And that is a good way to never get invited back and to not do a whole lot at all. And so what you've seen is CSOs and CIOs, and there's plenty of them that are actually amazing on this topic, so I don't want to paint a broad brush here, but there are some who don't know anything about the operations of their business, who know nothing about operation systems. And so they came from backgrounds of IT. When they look at the problem, they want to talk about patch management and vulnerabilities and AV and things like that. And it's not actually addressing the real problem. And those CEOs are having real conversations of, man, are we not going to be able to get this right with the people we have? Like, that seems weird. Like, what do we do about this? And so it's just an amazingly interesting conversations happening kind of at all levels right now.
You mentioned IT-OT convergence. What is that and why is it happening?
Yeah, I mean, IT-OT convergence is something that gets thrown out a lot. And I would note it's actually not happening. It's already done in many cases. But this idea of IT-OT convergence is, we're getting IT systems in the operations environment. We're seeing some more connectivity from the enterprise to the ICS. And it's this idea of like it converging together, the enterprise and the ICS. And the reason I say like that's already happened is if you dissect the terms OT and ICS, ICS historically related to the actual control systems, instrumentation, kind of really the control elements around a lot of the physics and what was happening out in the field of like, you know, valves and actuators and things like that. And OT was really mission critical IT. So Windows systems populating in a plant, but it was running an energy management system, purpose-built software to, you know, interact with transmission substations and similar. So it wasn't an IT system. You couldn't treat it like an IT system. It didn't have the same risk profile. It had different, you know, things that you could do to it. And so we called it OT. Now we really just talk about OT as kind of the whole thing to help at a macro level of communicate about the differences about OT. So this whole ICS versus OT like nuance is really just, you know, in the community debate stuff that doesn't really matter. And anyways, long story short, the idea of IT OT converging to me is a little silly because that was the whole point of OT to begin with is, yes, we already have IT in these environments. And again, that's like 15 years ago plus. And so I don't view it as if there's this IT OT convergence. I view it as that's already happened. What I articulate to people is there's really this digital transformation journey that these companies on. And it's more than just connecting into an enterprise. You'll have sensors in the production environment connecting directly to cloud. You know, and so it's not just about connectivity, though there is a big theme of hyperconnectivity, but it's also about how do we get that data? How do we use that data? How do we increase efficiencies? How do we scale it in a way that impacts the workforce? How do we provide more reliable and safe, you know, services to our users and consumers? It's a whole transformation of the business and the industrial environments. And that transformation is introducing complexity, it's introducing hyperconnectivity, and all of that converging with a threat landscape out there of actors and state actors and similar that are interested in industrial environments and focused on them and learning and developing capabilities. It's that convergence that's causing a lot of risk, that is causing a lot of people to get nervous. And if prevent only was your strategy, you're going to fail. And so it's that mix that we're seeing.
How do we get more people into the space?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, you have to make it welcoming. And so when you look at InfoSec and you look at a lot of the social media interactions and similar, like it's a surprise that we have any women in this space. Like it gets extraordinarily toxic. Women and people of color and similar and diverse candidates like go through way too much crap. And if you look at that, you don't want to join. And there's plenty of guys that look at that and go, well, if they can't even treat like people respectfully, then I don't want to be part of that either. And so I think InfoSec from a social media perspective and in the real world, too, I don't want to displace that it's not there, but I think it just gets amplified on social media, is already causing problems for InfoSec. So when we look at industrial security, first and foremost, we should learn from InfoSec and go, hey, if there's jerks in our community that act like that, let's kick them out fast. you know, kind of blacklist those folks fast, because first and foremost, we want to be welcoming to everybody, because it takes everybody. And when you're going toe-to-toe with state actors, you're going into hyper-complex environments, the last thing you want is groupthink. And diversity of thought are going to be extraordinarily important to doing that well. The second piece is you have to make an onboarding path where, you know, there has to be training and certifications. You know, there are various thoughts around certifications, but you have to have a kind of professional development track. And we spent a long time over at the SANS Institute, like building out that ICS curriculum as one path, not the only path, but one path, productizing and kind of professionalizing on education for, hey, here's your ICS 410 class to come learn about ICS, and kind of you're from IT, come on over, or you're from engineering, come learn about these things. Here's this 515 class about, you know, learning how to respond and hunt in these environments. And here's 612 about getting hands-on with industrial process and controllers and really learning. And so like that path has seen thousands of people get familiar with OT and ICS in ways that never existed before at scale. And, but then there's got to be something after to go get those folks that are now trained and invested in themselves an opportunity to get into an entry-level job into our field. And what I see a lot of the conversations on is around training, or so forth. And what I hear from a lot of my students is, I can't find a job that'll take me without like 10 years of experience. And normally what I communicate to folks is go find your local manufacturing facility, go find your local utility, your local oil and gas company. They'll onboard you. There's a lot of those jobs that they can't pay the higher, you know, InfoSec salaries of like competitive startups, but they'll invest in you and they'll train you and you'll learn in industrial operations. You'll get in those environments. And some of our best community members came from those backgrounds. And that's a great way, but we need to have a more concerted focus on that. And we talk about government's involvement and similar. There's got to be impact and influence and investment in getting people into those jobs when those jobs exist. I disagree about this giant workforce gap. Oh, there's, you know, 3 million jobs that are unfilled. No. There's 3 million job posts that are poorly worded with asking 7 years in experience on a technology that's only been around for three, and like all these principal jobs when there's no juniors. Like that's a gap we've got to take on. And it touches from HR systems to the way people are trying to onboard folks to kind of how you do professional development once you're in your job. Long story short, there's lots of areas to focus, but one of the biggest, in my opinion, is helping people get into the workforce and helping those companies better understand what good job descriptions and similar look like to onboard those people.
If you could wave a magic air-gapped wand, what is one thing you would change?
Scope to the world or like industrial security or... I mean, like world hunger is probably a pretty good one, but like what scope would you like?
Considering that the podcast is about industrial control systems, why don't we limit our magic to that space?
You're like, look, I just gave you a magic wand. Don't be greedy. Yeah, okay, I got you, Bryson. On industrial security, I'll give two different options. Number one, I really think we have a giant collection gap in the community of knowing really what's happening in these industrial environments. And so I broadly call that visibility, but it's not just an inventory. It's like, what's really happening? What's really occurring? Vendors are abusing their, you know, software license agreements. Adversaries are taking advantage of connectivity. Like, how bad is it and how bad is it not? And if I had a magic wand on the security discussion, I would actually start with, let's expose the real risks. Like, what is really taking place? I'd give us perfect visibility into like those environments. And then companies and governments and everybody else can make informed choices instead of, well, we have to worry about this systemic threat, do we? Like, is it actually real? Let's take a look. Or, hey, actually, here are some real threats and we need to address these as a community. Like, this is a very smart engineering operations kind of focused community that when they know what the problem is, they'll get it done. They'll invest in it. If they understand the real risk, that these companies aren't shy about hiring people and training them and doing it. They just have to understand it. So, but I think that starts with visibility, not like a risk management discussion. You really got to know what's really going on. So that's the technical one. The personal one, I see a number of folks that get looked up to as ICS folks, people that have been around for a while, that for whatever reason have become fairly gatekeeping / toxic. Like, let me tell you why everyone else's stuff sucks instead of telling you why mine is good. And it goes back to that diversity and like toxic discussion. Like, I would like to see, especially the people that get looked to, especially those that want to, you know, be in kind of a thought leadership position or whatever, like spend more energy doing the mission and less energy complaining and, crap posting each other and all this other stuff. I just don't think that's going to get us to where we need to go. And I think it's very off-putting to new people that want to come in the field to go, man, you could be a respected individual and some other respected individual can just like blast you publicly in blogs and videos and stuff for like weeks without you even saying anything to them. Like, I know this is a very specific example, but this happens a lot and everybody goes through this through people in their own, spheres. And it's like that external pressure is unnecessary when we're already going up against real challenges and real hard environments against real adversaries trying to do us harm. Like, we don't need to be fighting each other as well. And so I wish, kind of a Bill and Ted, I wish we could kind of just be excellent to each other. And that's probably the personal one.
You waved your magic wand. Now look into your crystal ball. 5-year prediction. One good thing, one bad thing.
Yeah. One good thing is this focus of OT that we see as it relates to those government discussions and private sector discussions and similar will help reveal what the problems are more than ever. And I do believe our community will come together and make massive improvements in ways we've never seen before. Like, we are already doing so much better in ICS security over the last decade than the previous decade. But I think it's going to speed up very, very quickly once we start understanding these problems. And now with the focus and board level discussions and similar, I think we're going to see some real improvements that relate to health and safety. Like, I believe it is possible, maybe not in 5 years, but I believe it is possible not to solve security, but to make it where it's impossible to kill people through a cyber attack. Like, that should be the goal. How do we make that not a thing? Then go work on the security beyond that about protecting intellectual property and things like that. But if we can truly make it impossible or highly improbable for state adversaries and similar to hurt civilians and to kill people, like, sign me up. That's where I think we're going. That's where I think it'd be awesome. The one downside is at this time that we've got this hyperconnectivity, at this time that we've got kind of this journey coming, I think it's going to get worse. We've got a lot of complexity built into our environments with little understanding of it. We are consistently copy and pasting IT security controls into ICS without understanding what they're supposed to do or the value they're supposed to bring. There's plenty of them that are useful, but wrongly applied or applied for the wrong reasons aren't going to be effective. And you have a lot of CSOs and teams that don't know anything about industrial operations. And some of them are going, well, let's learn. Let's go take a case of donuts and talk to our operators. And those teams are going to succeed. But there's going to be a lot that go, I don't have enough time in the day to do all the stuff I already need to do. So I'm just going to copy and paste what I'm already doing. And they're going to fail. And so you're going to have kind of a separation take place in the community, in my opinion, where there's going to be some companies that really get it right and push the envelope in ways we've never seen. And you're going to have some that kind of go further to the bottom than they already were, where they're doing the wrong things at the same time we're getting that hyperconnectivity. And it's in those places that I'm concerned that a lot of this early reconnaissance and learning type activity by these threats we're seeing are going to start manifesting in more attacks than we're seeing today at a time that we're more connected and interactive and complexity. And I think we're going to get to a real bad place for quite a few companies. You know, that divergence in maturity is something that I'm not looking forward to, but I believe it'll rectify itself as the community can start looking at, well, that's what right looks like. Okay, well, let's go share those lessons learned and let's all do that as a community. So I think we'll get there, but within a 5-year window, I am a bit concerned about the divergence.
Grab bag, any last thing you want to talk about?
No, man, I think it's just, it's all good stuff. And again, for anybody out there like listening about industrial security and similar, then I would just say the water's warm, like, come on in, it's a perfect time to get involved. And for those of you that are like, oh, well, there's not ICS security jobs in my company. Well, you probably work at an industrial company. Like, everything outside of financial sectors is industrial. Data centers, HVAC systems, utilities are obvious, mining, rail, oil and gas, chemical. It's not just the big industrials. You start getting into like anything and everything has OT and kind of industrial system. Just start figuring out where that is in your company and see if you can get your leadership, whatever, to support some assessments where you go in yourself and start taking a look or go talk to the operators and engineers and say, hey, I'm here to learn. I don't really have anything to contribute just yet. Maybe I will, but I brought food and I'm super curious about your operations. Like, go build those bridges And it's a great way to then start getting that experience and also furthering the mission at your company. Like these are cool companies. If you're in one, even if you're not an industrial security role, I promise you there's a route to doing more in industrial. And we massively welcome you to the community. It's a great community. Come on over.
Rob, thank you for your time and your insights today.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Thank you for listening to Hack the Plant, a podcast of the R Street Institute and ICS Village Nonprofit. Subscribe to the podcast and share it with your friends. Even better, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts so we can reach even more listeners. Tell us what you thought about it and who we should interview next by finding us on Twitter at RSI or at ICS_Village. Finally, if you want to know more about R Street or ICS Village, visit rstreet.org or icsvillage.com. I'm your host, Bryson Borg. Thank you to executive producer Tyler Lowe of Fader Creative, creative producer William Gray, and editor Dominic Sterrett of Sterrett Productions.